Pete Seeger, Sis Cunningham, and myself, Israel Young.
That was Bob Dylan on WBAI in 1962. And that does it for today's broadcast. Special thanks to Democracy Now! Senior producer Mike Burke, and a very happy belated birthday to Flip, to Mike DeFilippo. Democracy Now! Produced by Aaron Mate, Renee Feltz, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Jerry D. with the WUSB Concert Billboard for the week of May 23rd to May 26th. On Monday, May 23rd, Elvis Costello and the Impostors will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Big Tasty's Funk Party will be at the Parkside Lounge in New York City at 9:30 p.m. On Tuesday, the 24th, Elvis Costello and the Impostors will be at the Beacon Theater in Manhattan at 8 p.m. On Wednesday, the 25th, Matt and Kim will be at the Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn at 9 p.m. Popa Chubby with Coco Montoya will be at B.B. King's in Manhattan at 8 p.m. Pamela Betty Band and Bike Night will be at Blacksmiths in Smithtown at 8 p.m. The Gary Sellers Band will be at the Barbecue in Patchogue at 7:30. For Wednesday the 26th, open mic with John Hassett at the Barbecue in Patchogue at 8 p.m. And another open mic with Jim Morin and J.D. Leonard at Pete's Place in Bohemia at 8 p.m. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM and online at WUSB.FM, where there are more live event listings so you can plan ahead. Thank you for listening.
And it's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's time once again for Off the Wall. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
a very good evening to everybody. Excuse me, I seem to have picked up a cough. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here live in the studio with you tonight, and happy to be so, because it almost didn't go that way. Nothing dark there. Yesterday was my grand jury selection day. And boy, oh boy, what fun that was! I got to wake up bright and early in the morning. You have to show up at 9 o'clock in a place called Riverhead, which is out to the east of Long Island. Which I guess you know you could go to worse places. It's just the hour of the day is something that is just too much for me sometimes. I had to go into training for this. I had to train myself to wake up early in the morning because usually I don't do that. And that meant staying up all night 2 days before so that I would go to sleep at 7 p.m. on Sunday night and hopefully wake up at 7 in the morning Monday, which worked out. It worked out like clockwork. It was great. Bright, refreshed, and raring to go. But here's the thing. You know, grand jury is different than regular jury. And I postponed this once before, and I've been kind of dreading it the whole time. Since I first got the notice. When was that? Back in January, February? I don't even know. But the first time I just decided, you know what, I'm not even going to go in. I can't get onto these hours. I'll just postpone this. I was working on too many projects at the time. So I figured, yeah, let's just postpone this till May. And that's exactly what happened. I got the notice saying, come in Monday morning, May 23rd. And I did, you know. I was driving down the expressway, which is... It's nice to drive east on the expressway. It's totally different than driving west, especially during rush hour. There aren't sodium vapor lights up above the road. There aren't as many cars. You might even see some wildlife. It's different. It's more relaxed, but it's still having to get up in the morning and go someplace, which is a real pain, and not something that I was looking forward to doing every day for the next month. Yeah, that's what a grand jury is. 9 to 5, 5 days a week for a month or more. Sometimes they make you stay. They make you stay even longer than that. So this would have adversely affected a lot of things for me because obviously it would have been hard to do radio. If you get out of Riverhead at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're not going to be in Stony Brook by six. Not unless you attain speeds, which you really shouldn't be attaining. So when I got in there, I was surprised by how many people were there in the room. You walk into this building, it's a criminal courts building in Riverhead, and you walk in and right away you see a mob of people in a waiting room. You don't go up any stairs, you don't do anything, it's just right there in the lobby. You have to go through a metal detector, you have to empty your pockets of any change or keys or things like that. The guy in front of me had to give up his water. He had to give up his water bottle. I mean, what is he going to do? Spray people with water? That's what we're worried about? I can think of all kinds... I probably shouldn't be thinking about it when I'm in there, but I can think of all kinds of ways to do nasty things that don't involve bringing water into the waiting room. It was really silly. And then what happens? He dumps the water in the garbage can, which is inside the room anyway. So if this is some kind of magical chemical that's going to kill everybody, it's still there. It's still in the same damn room. So what is being accomplished by this, other than to force somebody to buy water from the people that sell it inside the same room? So there were about, 300 of us. And by the way, I was able to bring everything into this room. I was able to bring my laptop because I was told there was going to be Wi-Fi. I was able to bring my phone, which has a camera on it. I didn't want the camera, but try getting a phone these days without a camera. So I had a camera phone in there. Even though the sign says no camera phones allowed, they didn't check. They didn't care. I had a camera, too. Inside my bag, I had a camera. Yeah. And what else did I have? I had an MP3 recorder and a microphone. And I had all of this in my big black laptop bag. It's and I say laptop bag, it's really kind of not doing it justice because you could hold 5 laptops in this thing. And... it's very good for packing. It's what I travel with. It's what I bring all kinds of electronic equipment. And I passed that through the metal detector and got it on the other side, and it was fine. But I had all this with me. And let me tell you something. It was not my first choice. I would have brought my knapsack. which you know, you can just sling over your back rather than having to lug around this big briefcase type thing. But my knapsack is still soaking wet. And yeah, you know, it is still soaking wet, and I partially blame Google for that. That might seem a little rash, might seem a little bit out of nowhere. Why would I blame Google for a wet bag? Well, it's because, and I don't want to veer too much off of topic here, but it's because Google does not seem to understand, Google Maps specifically, does not seem to understand addresses in Queens. All right? You put in an address in Queens, and it will argue with you. It will argue with you and say, you know, this address doesn't exist. Did you mean this? Did you mean this over in New Jersey, maybe? It's like, yeah, I'm that stupid, Google, that I can't make up the difference between an address in a different city and the address I'm actually asking you for. Why don't you go into your terabytes of data, multi-terabytes of data, and see if maybe somewhere, somebody in history made reference to the same address I did, and maybe you have something to learn from that. But no, it's because, here's the thing, it's because addresses in Queens have hyphens. All right, so if you say 121-75 something, it can't figure out what you mean by that. I think you might have to merge them all together, but that doesn't always help either. And you just wind up with all kinds of, did you mean this? Did you mean that? No, I didn't mean any of that. I meant what I said. And all I want is directions to get to this place. I had to get to a place in Queens to pick up boxes. Yeah, it sounds ridiculous, I know, but the kind of boxes that you assemble to put bottles of beverages in, because there's only one place in the universe that has these, the particular kind, where they don't break. And yeah, it's a crazy, long, drawn-out story, but basically it involved me taking the 2600 van into Queens on Wednesday to do this, to get into Astoria, to get this these boxes, to cram them into the van and get the boxes and get to the other radio show in time. Now, I said I brought the van. That's another thing that Google Maps does not understand. Commercial vehicles. It keeps trying to put me onto roads that I'm not allowed to drive on as a commercial vehicle. And I've complained about, I don't know who to complain to. I've complained to everybody I know who works for Google, but I can't seem to get this resolved. I have to take the expressway. I can't take the parkway. The parkway, I'm not allowed to take it. It's a stupid reason. You have SUVs that you could raise a family in that are able to drive on this particular parkway, ostensibly because it has low bridges, so 18-wheelers shouldn't be on there. Yeah, but a van is not an 18-wheeler. The only thing keeping me off the parkway are commercial plates, which SUVs don't have, even though they're bigger. So regardless, that's the law. I can't do it. And I keep trying to make the directions take me from a place where I would avoid getting on the parkway so that Google won't put me there. And every time, it just puts me right back. I even said, from the expressway, from exit 13 of the expressway, whatever exit it is, can you take me here? Yeah, you simply go over here to the BQE, get on the parkway, and then drive on these other roads that you're not allowed to go on. And it's just, it's more work trying to finagle Google Maps to get you the directions you need. So finally, I gave it a local street, and it got me down the local streets. But it did not recognize the number of the street in Queens because it just didn't recognize the numbers. So it had to give me the actual street, just the street itself. And so the address that it was getting me to was no number on the street, which was miles away from where I needed to be. But at least it got me onto the street, so all I had to do was go down the street. But it added time. It added a lot of time. And here's where things started to really go wrong. You might have noticed it rained a little bit last Wednesday. Boy, did it ever rain. The clouds opened up, and it was a monsoon. It was a monsoon in the middle of Queens, in the middle of rush hour, almost the middle of rush hour. It was about 3:45 or so, and this place closed at 4. And all I had were directions to get to the street. And basically, I thought I'd make it. I thought I'd get there without any problem until I heard this noise, this sort of clunking noise in the van. That's never a good thing. And I didn't know what it was. Was the engine seizing up? Was something, whatever it was, I knew I'd be able to get it fixed, unlike the smart car, which I'll get into in a moment. Oh boy, it's just going to be an hour of me complaining, isn't it? It turned out the windshield wipers decided to stopped functioning at that point. I don't exactly know what happened, but something happened where the windshield wipers were not working in the middle of the biggest downpour I had seen in years. And here I am in heavy traffic in Queens, trying to get someplace I don't know how to get to with very limited time. And it is raining so incredibly hard. I had to pull over, even though there was no place to pull over, just so I could wipe the window and see straight ahead. And basically what I wound up doing was kind of limping forward, because otherwise I'd be blocking traffic and causing all kinds of problems, sticking my head out the window to see where I was going, desperately calling people, not while I was moving, okay, but while I was stopped, trying to get the actual address of the place and get human directions, and basically just limping along in as pathetic a manner as possible with absolutely no windshield wipers at all. And yeah, I got soaked. I got totally soaked trying to deal with that situation. Made it to the place. Literally, I was actually a minute late. They weren't happy about that, but I was able to get what I needed to get. Then, of course, I had to get to the city to do the radio show, but I was able to wait for the rain to abate a little bit and then drive over there. Of course, it happened all over again later that night where everything just opened up and I had to wait that out before I could move the van. I guess it's not really fair to blame Google for the wet bag. That sort of happened afterwards. But I blame them for the frustration. And it's just, it just nags me. It gets to me. The way people always stick up for Google whenever I complain. And I complain a lot. I complain about all kinds of things. But whenever I complain about Google, somebody always stands up and says, well, no, it's your fault, not their fault. They're doing everything perfectly. And there are so many examples of this. This is one example. I guarantee you people are going to say, no, you did this wrong. You shouldn't have done that. You could have done this. If you had simply typed this instead of that, then you would have gotten what you needed. Except I don't know I'm supposed to type that because there's nothing telling me to do that. You know? But there are so many other things. For instance, well, just Gmail itself. The things that Gmail does, which are so incredibly annoying and concerning. But when it first came out, for instance, when Gmail first came out, did you know that you could just leave your screen logged in and walk away and then log in again, and you wouldn't know that your other screen was still logged in? And meanwhile, the place where you left it logged in was, they were able to read all your mail coming in, going out. They could even send mail as you, and you had no way of controlling this. After years, they finally fixed that. They finally added something saying, yeah, there's another terminal logged in. But this was something that Hotmail had at the time. And I was pretty adamant about complaining about this, and nobody saw the issue. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to? You should be able to keep track of where you logged in. If you don't keep track of it, then you deserve whatever happens. Yeah, but it's a simple thing. A simple thing to add something saying, "Hey, reminder, you're logged in someplace else. Maybe you want to kill that session or be more careful or something like that." But no, Gmail itself, just the very concept of it, a company reading your mail and showing you advertisements. Well, you don't have to look at the advertisements, do you? It's a free service. So why, you know, we bitch about Microsoft, we bitch about everything, but we don't bitch about this when they show you ads. Well, they're so tiny, they don't get in the way. They're ads anyway, and they're reading your mail. Well, people aren't reading your mail. Computers are reading your mail and simply matching words. Yeah, but they're still going through your mail. Will you feel any better about the NSA if they say, well, we're not using humans to look for certain phrases and weed out people that way? We're using computers to do that. Does that make it all right? No, you're still reading the mail. It's still, there's no privacy. And so many people I know use this service as their trusted email client. And that's just not right. You know, back in the old days, people ran their own mail servers. They had the email on their computer, and they could enforce whatever security they want to enforce. Keep everything encrypted if they wanted to do that. And of course, you can send encrypted mail on any service, but you do not have physical access to it. And that's important because there are all kinds of things that could happen. First of all, a company could disappear. They could change the terms of any agreement and take all your data with them. It happens. It's not going to happen here because Google is huge, obviously, but it's still, you're signing away something that you should be holding on to yourself, putting everything into the cloud. It's not really the most intelligent way to go about things. And more importantly, and I think we learned this recently with one of the WikiLeaks stories, is that subpoenas are served very often on these companies to turn over data about you, to turn over your messages, your emails, your chat logs, whatever. It's all there someplace. And, you know, if you have this in your home, well, then at least you know if somebody comes and seizes equipment and starts looking at things. Yeah, they could do a cloak and dagger thing and make it really hard for you to detect that, but it's harder. It's harder to get away with breaking into somebody's house and spying on their computer than it is to simply walk into a big company with a subpoena and say, we need to put a tap on this particular account. Give us everything you have. And many times you don't find out about this for months or until you get indicted for something. So yeah, that's of concern for any service. And what worries me about this is how many people have simply given all of their data over because, well, Google's cool and they do things right. Well, okay, you know, I agree they're cool. I agree they have the right sentiment for the most part. It doesn't mean you don't remain vigilant. Doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that when you question them, you're not on their side, that you're battling them. No, you're simply looking for things that aren't quite right, that are of concern. And I just find that whenever I notice something that's bothersome and troublesome, it always turns out to be, well, it's the user's fault. For instance, I do have a Gmail account myself, and I use it occasionally. It's cool. It really is nice. I had a video chat the other day that was great. But I wouldn't discuss matters of national intelligence on that. Wouldn't do it. Occasionally, there's a message that says your connection to chat has been lost. Retrying in 2 minutes or whatever. And I ask people, how come that's happening? Well, there's something wrong with your internet connection. Well, no, there's nothing wrong with my internet connection because I'm connected to other things. I'm doing other things live. So what's up with Gmail? No, nothing's wrong with Gmail. It's your account. It's always the user. And that bugs me because that's sort of what I've been dealing with for many, many years is this kind of superiority of the people running things and the stupidity of the end users. And it's very easy to be one of the people that runs the things and to simply dismiss all the end users as morons. But that's not the case because while there are morons all over the place, you simply can't categorize everybody in a particular position in life as being either smart or stupid. Point is, lots of times things go wrong and the end users are the ones who are right and should be listened to. So anyway, yeah, so that's why my knapsack was wet, because it rained on Wednesday and I had quite an adventure getting to the city and back. And keep in mind also the 2600 van doesn't start well in the rain, so I had that to worry about as well. Driving, no windshield wipers, rush hour traffic, no way of knowing where I was going, but everything worked out in the end. But I had to bring in the big black bag to the grand jury selection. And it just looked really awkward, me lugging this thing around that had all this equipment in it. And so I sat down with the about 300 or so people that were in the room and waited for the fun to start. And while I was waiting, I took out the laptop and decided to check out what was going on Wi-Fi-wise. What a word. And right away, the first thing that happened when I launched into a browser, 2600.com is my homepage, I got this message saying that it was blocked. Yeah, apparently the courthouse system here in Suffolk County has deemed 2600.com a threat. So right away, I had a challenge of trying to figure out a way around that. Couldn't find one. I tried all manner of variations, 2600.net, 2600.org, the IP address, all kinds of things that link to it. And they had it pretty much locked down. People were not going to be listening to Off the Hook anywhere in the Suffolk County Court Complex. This is something that if people want to get involved in this, I will definitely lend my support to it. There is nothing on the 2600.com website that tells you how to hack into computers, that does anything really objectionable in that regard. What we do is put up audio of radio shows, we put up news stories, we put up announcements. That in itself is fairly tame. Now, if you want the stuff that people freak out about, that's what the magazine is for. That's how it works. The magazine has that information. And I'll bet, you know, you could probably use the courthouse system to go and buy a copy online, buy a Kindle edition or a PDF or whatever we offer online, plus the magazine itself, and you wouldn't be blocked from that. But simply going to our site and reading news and listening to radio shows, that's objectionable. I think they're making a lot of misassumptions here. And if people want to start some kind of campaign to make this right, I'm right there with you, because it's annoying as hell. It's stupidity. It just prevents people from communicating. So any event, I figured I'd show them. I just connected to Al Jazeera after that and started reading the news while I heard gasps of astonishment around me. And basically kept that up for about a half hour while people simply gathered their things together and waited for whatever instructions we were going to be given. And those instructions came in. They basically said, okay, welcome to grand jury selection. We're basically picking four juries today. There's no interview process. And yeah, so no interview process, which means all the advice that people have been giving me for weeks now, saying, oh, all you have to do is tell them about your contempt of court or all the lawsuits you've been involved with or various other unsavory things that will definitely not win you any favor in the legal system. No, there's no interview process because that's not how grand juries work. They simply pick 23 people per jury at random. And they had to pick four different juries yesterday. So that's a total of 92 people. And then they went through the reasons why people would be able to get out of it. If they pled hardship, for instance, this would take them away from work and they wouldn't be able to put food on the table, or they had to raise a kid, or they had to go to school, or they had to begin serving a prison term, or all kinds of possible reasons why you would not be able to serve. And it's interesting, too, because they gave these reasons and then they said, now we want to say if you're unable or unwilling to serve, then stay behind in this room. And I didn't get the last part, unwilling. Well, none of the reasons that they gave lent themselves to people who are unwilling to serve. They simply lent themselves to people that were unable to for one reason or another. People just said, no, I'm not going to do it. And the thing is, when I parked my car, right away, this woman latched on to me and started talking to me about how the legal system really screwed over her husband and she has absolutely no faith in it and she's not going to do this, no way. And I'm like just smiling and nodding, saying, okay, sister, you go. But I don't think that's going to fly very high as far as an excuse if you tell the judge you just don't like the legal system. Don't think that's going to work. But people need to vent off their steam. Fine, whatever. Anyway, I couldn't stay behind in the room. I couldn't claim any of these things. If I did, it would be a lie. Wouldn't have caused me heart. I mean, it's a pain in the ass having to wake up in the morning. But I don't think that's the kind of hardship they're talking about. Able-bodied, mentally somewhat fit, can find my way to the place every day. If my number is up, then my number is up, and that's how it's going to be. So with that thought in mind, I went with the, I guess at this point it was down to about 200 people, maybe even less. Maybe it was more like 150 at this point that we all went up to the courtroom. It had to have been less because this courtroom was about a quarter the size of the room we were all in before. And they crammed all of us in there. And basically, we had to each hand in a little piece of paper that had our name on it. They put this into one of those little drums that you spin when you're doing lottery drawings or something. And they were going to simply pick names out. Simple as that. So what they asked for at the very beginning was if there are people who want to serve in the western part of the county, which is Hauppauge and Central Islip, hand in your names now. and the rest of you will be drawn for Eastern Suffolk. And right away, that raised some questions with me. By doing that, did that mean that I wasn't going to be part of the Eastern Suffolk drawing? Or was my name going to remain there for the Eastern Suffolk drawing? You know, these were the things they weren't telling you. So it was a bit of concern. I figured my odds of not being selected were better in Western Suffolk because there are more people in Western Suffolk. Hence, more people would be in the drawing. Hence, your odds are better for not being selected. Whereas Eastern Suffolk, they might not even have enough people to come up with 46 names, which is what you need for two juries. So I decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to go with the Western Suffolk. Throw my name in there. I got to tell you, folks, it was agony as I read name by name, one at a time, because it didn't seem like there were very many more than 46 names in that particular drum right there. And when they called a name, you just had to get up and go to the group of people that were going to be your life for the next month. And then the very last name of jury number one, I heard my name. And I stood up. And then I realized I only heard my first name, not my last name. My last name was different. It was somebody else. And I sat back down again and said a silent prayer. And then the second jury got selected just as agonizingly and slowly. And I made it through that. But then the uncertainty came. Okay, what happens now? Are they going to take my name out of the drum? Or did I just somehow get suckered into being drawn for all four of the juries? That's not really fair, is it? Because these people from Eastern Suffolk, they didn't have to go through the agony I just went through for the first two. So what exactly is going on here? Well, they asked for the names of people from Eastern Suffolk. And they counted them up. And sure enough, they didn't have enough names. They didn't have 46 names. So then they asked, and this is the weird part, they asked for volunteers. They asked for volunteers from the Western Suffolk people who would want to put their names in for Eastern Suffolk as well. And I was like, really? Okay, they're asking for people to do that. That's not going to go over well. To my great surprise, a number of people came forward. A good number of people, a couple of dozen people came forward. Said, yeah, I'll put my name in there. I wasn't sure if they were confused, if they thought that they had to do this. Otherwise, they wouldn't have actually served their term, and they'd be called back in 6 months. But the way it was explained, if your name wasn't selected, you're good for 6 years. So I stayed quiet while all these people went up. And I realized, you know what, maybe we're actually at a stage where this many people want to be on juries because of the $40 a day, $5 an hour. Yeah, less than minimum wage. Maybe there are enough people who are willing to do that. And I think it might have been that. It might have been that people are really hungry for work and this is an option. Which suits me fine because all the more power to you. I've got other things to do. And so the next two juries were selected. My name was not picked. I don't think my name was in there. And I was free to go. They gave me a form. Actually, I have the form with me. Hang on. It's in the big black bag, which I brought here with me. All right. This is a huge bag, so I got to find that piece of paper. Okay, here it is. Basically, you handed them part of your form, which you had filled out, and they handed you a piece of paper. Piece of paper says, to whom it may concern, please be advised that so-and-so appeared for grand jury duty this date and the following occurred. Juror was present, not drawn, and jury service has been satisfied. This document is not valid without a raised seal over signature. And there is a raised seal from the county court assistant, associate court clerk. But what's not there, and the part where I said so-and-so, please be advised that so-and-so appeared. You might think my name would be there. My name is not there. It's a blank line. It's a blank line. Please be advised that fill in the blank appeared for grand jury duty on this date and was not selected and has fulfilled their service. Well, you know what? What is it stopping me from selling this piece of paper from anybody who wants to be excused from jury service for the next 6 years? Doesn't seem like very much. You know, it's something to think about. Probably not wise, but you'd think they'd just take the time to put your name on the form. And it's not likely they're going to call you again because I assume they keep track of these things as well. So I don't really need that piece of paper, but somebody who did get called would show that piece of paper and maybe get away with something. Just a thought. That's all it is. That's one of the reasons why I shouldn't be on a grand jury, because I'm always thinking like this. But it would have been fun. It would have been fun to be on the grand jury. I would have made the most of it. I would have asked a lot of questions and not necessarily followed everything that prosecutors were telling grand jurors to follow, which they usually do. And it would have been a good window into the system. But I've got other things to do. I've got publications to work on, radio to do. I have to drive to Arizona at some point. Yeah, I have to help a friend move a car and going to get that first Starbucks out of the way. Newport Beach, California, here I come. So that's going to be happening really soon, and we'll figure out what else lies ahead. But yeah, that was my grand jury experience. And I'm glad it's over. I'm sure you're glad it's over as well. Now we get to do other things. Oh, and I'll bet we're all glad the world isn't over. We talked about this last week. A little bit red-faced because, yeah, we were talking about the end of the world as if it were coming. And it didn't show up on Saturday. And everyone's really embarrassed. You know, I got to say, really, people are this surprised. People in that particular religious organization. It just seems to me that something so definitive, so specific as far as the date and time. They actually said 6 p.m. the world's going to start ending. Right away, alarm bells should be going off. Have you ever seen anything like this happen before? Ever seen any of these Nostradamus predictions happen with anything but vague accuracy? Like, well, there'll be death in the month ahead of a sort that is noteworthy. Yeah, okay, that's great. Wonderful. What else can you... What other card tricks do you know? No, it's... When somebody predicts something this specific, how in God's name do you expect it to happen? Well, in God's name it did not happen, and everyone's really embarrassed. And you kind of feel sorry for them, but not really, because they wasted all this money on billboards. Is that billboard on the BQE still up? Did they take that down? I would like to have interviewed the people taking it down. Or just gathered round and mock them, even though they don't have anything to do with the organization. Still, it's got to be pretty funny. I'm looking at the familyradio.com website right now. There's no mention of rapture, the end of the world, any of that. It's like it never happened. But will these people remember this and say next time they're told about something that's inevitable, well, you were wrong the last time and the time before that, and you really don't know what you're talking about. I mean, it's nice to be all religious and stuff, but maybe the interpretation should be up to the individual and not other people that seem to understand how the entire world works. It doesn't. It doesn't work that simply. But yeah, you feel sorry for the old guy, you know? The 89-year-old leader of Family Radio, who's embarrassed now. What did you expect? Do you really think you had that much of a handle on life, the universe, and everything that you could predict the exact time the world was going to end? And blame gay rights movements and all kinds of other things that you don't understand and object to for causing this? Yeah, it's pretty silly. But it's not happening. It's not this. Actually, you know, they're not over yet. They say now that, okay, we miscalculated. It's going to happen in 5 months. That's what they said at first, actually. They said the process is going to start on Saturday. It'll take 5 months for the world to be completely destroyed. Well, you know what? Okay, fine. Go with that. You know, this week we had devastating tornado in Missouri. Over 100 people killed. We have a volcano in Iceland erupting, you know. We have the Atlanta Thrashers who are going to be leaving. So you got the big three. Yeah, no, it's true. The hockey team in Atlanta is going to be moving, and guess where they're going to be moving to? Winnipeg, Manitoba. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when Kyle and I were in Canada, we stopped at the big train station in Toronto, and we were looking for maps, and we ran into this train crew who were about to board a train, and they happened to mention that they were from Winnipeg. And we talked about this on the radio. I said, you know, it's always good to know something about various places. And I knew that Winnipeg had lost their beloved hockey team about 15 years ago, the Winnipeg Jets, and they had never gotten over it. And hockey is like a religion in Canada, but a sensible religion, one where they don't predict the end of the world. And just saying something to them like, I hope you get the Jets back someday, means a lot. And it meant a lot to them. And looks like it's happening. The announcement's going to come this week, supposedly. So, wow, that's kind of cool, isn't it? I don't follow hockey. I don't really care about it. But it's good to see people be happy about things. And also to have remote places brought into fun things. Yeah, Manitoba. I mean, how many of us have even been to Manitoba? So we don't know if it's going to be the Winnipeg Jets or the Manitoba Moose or whatever they're going to call the team, but looks like happy days are ahead for that particular remote city in the prairies of Canada. So that's that in itself is kind of cool. So you have these apocalypses, moving of a hockey team and tornadoes and volcanoes and probably other things too. And they could claim credit for that. They could say, yeah, this is proof that we're right. But I think they're kind of confused right now. Okay, speaking of gay rights and the end of the world and things like that, well, some people in Minnesota are up in arms. Republican-led Minnesota legislature approved late on Saturday putting a state constitutional amendment banning gay marriage to voters in November of 2012. So they're going to put up a referendum about gay marriage in November 2012. They voted 70-62 after about 5 hours of discussion, cementing the amendment's place on the ballot for 2012. The Senate approved the proposed amendment earlier in May, largely along party lines. You might ask, okay, what's the big deal here? Well, first of all, Family Radio was blaming the gay rights movement for the end of the world. That's one thing. Okay, so you have all these people up in arms for various reasons. Why is this significant? Well, it's actually rather clever. Because if you look at the current presidential nominees that are out there supposedly running for office in 2012, Republicans aren't really standing out all that much. They don't really have a rock star. They don't have somebody who's going to take it away. And it's going to result in people kind of giving up, not even showing up to the polls, saying, you know what, the Democrats are going to have this. Why bother? But if you have something emotional that'll bring people to the polls, like this gay marriage thing, and you get people riled up and ready to turn up in big numbers, well, while they're there voting against the gays, they're also going to vote against the Democrats and vote for the Republicans. So it's a way to bring people to the polls. That's what this is. That's why you're seeing this. That's why you're seeing these kinds of initiatives. They're designed to bring people to the polls. So yeah, it's a bit clever. It's a bit sleazy. But it needs to be fought. Fight fire with fire. Yeah, I said it. I mentioned the smart car before. I said I was going to get into this because when the windshield wiper broke on the van, you know, there I was stuck in the middle of rain, in the middle of Queens, and it was a catastrophe. But I knew once I got through all of this, I'd be able to just get it fixed someplace, be able to pull into any mechanic and say, hey, look at this. It's broken. Please fix it. And they could do it. But with today's intelligent cars that are all computerized and basically DMCA'd all over the place, only certain people are allowed to touch your car. Only the dealer can touch your car and fix certain things. That's what made me have to go all the way to Canada in October to get the computer in my car fixed. because the computer had broken down a week after the warranty ran out. And, you know, if there's any device in a car that knows when a warranty runs out, it's probably going to be the computer. But regardless, $3,000 down the drain for a device that wasn't even a mechanical device. Everything else in the car worked fine. The computer had to be replaced. Okay, fine, whatever, you got me there. But now, with this whole key escapade that I've been going through, and in case you haven't heard this, basically one of my keys stopped working. Apparently, and I found this out after talking to a lot of people, apparently what happened was, I blame Big Audio Dynamite for this. I'm sorry, but you guys got to take the rap. When I was at the concert a month or so ago, I must have been jumping up and down an awful lot, and the key was in my pocket, and something must have simply been pressing against it. It's badly designed, where if you press the button, then the signal is sent out, and the button obviously is easy to press, too easy to press. Because when I walked by my car later that night, or I stumbled by my car later that night, I noticed it started flashing at me. And I thought that was funny, because usually you have to press the button to get it to flash at you, but this time the button was already pressed. And the battery had worn out to such a degree that the programming had been lost. And all it could do was flash the lights to tell me that the battery was dead. Not very useful. But fortunately, I had another key. So I was able to actually get the thing started. But if the same thing would have happened to the other key, guess what? I would not be able to turn the car on at all. Because you have to be able to press a certain button. If you open up the door and go in through the back, you have to press a button to turn the immobilizer off. And if you don't have any battery power, you don't have the programming, you can't do that. I found the website, which pretty much speaks to me. Indicators flashing 9 times. This is the flashing that happens when you walk by the car. When you click unlock on the key fob, that's what they call it, the key fob, does your indicator flash 9 times very quickly? Yes, it does. If the indicators flash 9 times, it means there is a fault with the key. It can be one of 2 things. One is okay, the other is not good. The okay one, if you press unlock on the key and the indicators flash 9 times, the door is open and you can start the car, then the battery in the key fob is running low and should be replaced straight away. The bad fault, if you press unlock on the key and the indicators flash 9 times but the doors don't unlock, then you have problems. Even if you get in through the boot and open the doors, the immobilizer will not be disabled, so the car won't start. The only way to fix this fault is to take the car to the smart dealer using your spare key and have a new key fob coded to work with the car. Now, unfortunately, smart car dealers in the States are not the same as smart car dealers in Canada. They don't share information. The only way to get this done is to go to Canada. Now, the question here, good question. What if I only have one key? And I gotta love the answer. Then you are an idiot for not getting a second key. The smart system can have 4 keys coded to it. My spare key does the same. That's why I use the other one. Then you only have yourself to blame for waiting too long. Now you'll have to trailer your car to your nearest smart dealer and have it sorted. What if I live hundreds of miles away from a dealer? You'll have to have it trailered hundreds of miles. Simple. Yeah, that's that is something. What if I don't have a smart dealer in my country, and that's me? Well, you'd better find someone with a TAN code calculator and a Mercedes-Benz Star Machine, or your car isn't moving. You shouldn't have bought a car in a country with no dealer backup. Yeah, thank you. Okay, thanks very much for that advice. Yeah, I feel like an idiot now. But it means I have to drive to Canada as long as that other key stays good. I will get a third key, too. That way I'll feel better. Okay, you know what? I feel better now for having complained the entire hour. And it's actually, I want to go out with a special tribute today because, as you might have heard on Democracy Now, of all places, it's Bob Dylan's 70th birthday. And times like this, it's a special occasion. You have to do something special. And I just thought, you know, it's something that should be acknowledged. And hats off to the guy. He's changed the world. He's come up with all kinds of music. And why don't we all just take a moment and think about the amazing music that has come our way, the words, the symbolism, and just the memories. All right. That's going to do it for us here tonight on Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel. We'll see you next week. OTW at 2600.com. Have yourselves a good night. Wow.
Once upon a time you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you...
Wait, stop. I can't do this. I'm sorry, I can't do this. There's a reason I'm not in commercial radio. That sounded so slick and so produced and so predictable. It's a great song. I love the song, but you can hear it everywhere, all right? No, we're not going to go out like that. We're not going to go out like that. Let's do something different. Yeah, because that's what we're about. We do different things. Hats off to Bob Dylan, like I said, but let's hear something else, all right? And you know what? Let's not even hear Bob Dylan. Let's hear somebody making fun of Bob Dylan. And what better person to make fun of Bob Dylan than John Lennon? All right. That's it. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Lord, take this makeup off of me. I said, Lordy, 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 take this makeup off of me. It's bad enough on the beach, but it's worse in the sea. Because I'm knocking on heaven's door. Because I'm looking for my mom. I said, Mom, take these guns away from me. I said, Mom, take these guns away from me. I got so thin now, they're dragging me down on my knees. Oh yeah, man, do you, Mr. Jones, town? Now I've been here so long, I almost forgot my name. I said, Lord, I've been here so long, I almost forgot my name. But as long as I keep touring, I'll always be in the game. Fame, brain, shame, dame, game.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ditter. Thank you, Mr. Ditter.
The official Soviet newspaper said the temple members had protested the mindless arms race and the filthy war in Vietnam and were persecuted and finally forced to seek refuge in another country. Wow, it sounds like a ballad to me. Oh, man, Bangkok, Thailand has launched an air-sea search and fishing boat carrying some 400 Vietnamese refugees. The boat was towed back out to sea after arriving in Thailand. Sources said because of a breakdown in communication. Oh, Lord, the boat was towed into Thai waters by a German freighter of the Thai Navy, unaware that the refugees had been guaranteed resettlement in West Germany, took the boat back out to sea after providing the passengers with provisions. See, that's deep, man. Chinese newspapers have made their first reference to the country's current war poster campaign, quoting Vice Premier Chen Haoxing as saying the country's stable and its leaders are confident of implanting modernization programs. Oh, this should get me in the village voice. Chen gave his blessing to the campaign, but he commented, not all the opinions of the masses are carefully thought out, nor can we demand that they all be correct, adding, this is nothing terrible. It's bad enough, but it's not terrible. former President Richard Nixon on his second trip outside the United States since his resignation, was a smiling, handshaking politician again, greeting crowds outside his hotel and trying a little French. He sure as hell didn't try it on Pat. Mr. Nixon is in Paris to sightsee and be interviewed on French television before going on to deliver a speech in England. He'll participate in a French call-in program and said he will answer questions in Welsh. It's pretty big, Mr. N. I'm so cynical I could just keep on doing this forever, because you know they ain't gonna be looking at my golden bunions in 100 years from now. They're gonna be selling my socks like Judy Garland, and I hope they get a good price. I mean, what with inflation and the price of rice. But man, I should worry. I own all my own songs and I wrote them myself too. I got 24 children, 14 wives, 3 mistresses, 59 accountants, 105 lawyers, 2 million fans, a postage system that never fails to land me in jail. Look for my mail, perhaps have a garage sale, and you know, go save the whale, and you know, get a boat and go for a sail, and oh, how do you get out of this hell? I'm stuck inside of a lexicon with the Roger Searsaurus blues again. Sometimes I wish I was just George Harrison, you know, but all answers, oh my God, oh my God. I just like to leave you with this message. They say the best things in life are free, except on TV.
Yeah, kids, you're listening to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook, 7 to 9 p.m. Tonight, Bob Dylan, but not your usual Bob Dylan show. Tonight it's going to be the leftover songs from the genius. I call it I Wish I Threw It All Away. Got to sweep something under the rug, and here's the stuff.
Thank you. mountain man on a hill. 10,000 men here. Some of them going down, some of them gonna get killed. 10,000 men dressed in Oxford blue. 10,000 men dressed in Oxford blue. Drumming in the morning, in the evening they'll be coming for you. 10,000 men on the blue. 10,000 men on the blue. None of them doing nothing that your mama wouldn't disapprove. Buttermilk sweeping in.